Hello, Mr. Varoufakis. Thank you very much for joining us at El Búho. How are you?
Very well. I'm personally rested compared to the last 5 months, even though politically and collectively we're facing a very tough situation, both as Greeks but primarily as Europeans.
2 weeks ago, since your resignation from the Greek government, was it necessary for the Greek government to do the referendum if at the end Greece is accepting the bailout it once rejected?
Well, this is a very good question. On the 25th of June, we were presented with a terrible ultimatum. We had no mandate whatsoever to accept it because we judged it to be a catastrophic agreement for the Greek social economy. We also considered it to be very bad for Europe. But on the other hand, the way that it was presented to us just a few short days, 5 days before the end of the Greek program, rejecting it would effectively mean a rupture in the Eurozone. It would mean that Greece wouldn't be without the program, and effectively we would have a clear case of conflict between Greece and the Eurozone. We didn't have a mandate for that either. On the 25th of January, we were elected on a platform of negotiating within the Eurozone. So we did what any Democrat would do. We put this to the Greek people. Our recommendation was to vote no, simply because we were elected not to perpetuate the cycle of debt deflation, which has condemned Greece to 5 years of indignity and a massive economic and social crisis. So in that sense, we were cornered. We had no alternative but to turn to the Greek people. The Greek people gave us a resounding no, a very courageous no. I'm saying that it was courageous because, firstly, they were terrorized by the media, the mass media, that portrayed the no vote as effectively the end of Greece as we know it. And at the same time, of course, they were terrorized by the shutting of the banks, which was done at the behest of the Eurogroup. And yet they rose up against this blanket of fear, and they voted resoundingly no. I felt that that no should be utilized by us, the leadership, to energize us, to go back to Europe and to say to our European partners, to the institutions, to the Troika, that we had the mandate to negotiate further, to stay within the Eurozone on an agreement that would be viable. And if they insisted on imposing upon us an irrational, misanthropic agreement, let them do it. The Prime Minister disagreed with my view on this, and he decided, I understand exactly his reasons, even though I disagree with him, that as a responsible government, we could not allow the banks to be completely destroyed. So I was outvoted in the inner cabinet, and the decision was made to effectively capitulate. I could not concur with that, and this is why I resigned.
Hello, Mr. Varoufakis. This is Luis speaking.
Hi, Luis.
Picking up on Marianne's question and looking back at the past 5 months with some perspective, I'd like your comments on anything you now believe you might have been mistaken about, perhaps things that you might have done differently.
Oh, of course. I mean, anybody who goes through such a tumultuous negotiating process and claims that they have made no mistakes or they would not have done things differently is a dangerous fool. So, of course, we made mistakes. The primary error was to imagine that sound arguments would carry the day, that we would be able to confer with the institutions and in the level of the Eurogroup and to convince them on the basis of very strong, powerful reasoning that it was in their interest too, to effect a debtor structure that would allow us to repay more money back to our creditors while growing the Greek economy and reforming it. This was a miscalculation on our part. It became abundantly clear as the negotiation was progressing that reasonable arguments were not going to cut any ice with our creditors. The creditors claimed that they wanted their money back and that they wanted Greece to reform. It became clear very, very quickly that they were neither interested in claiming their money back nor in reforming Greece. They were only interested in humiliating a government that dared say no to a failed program. We fought, I think, very well and very hard to secure the 20th of February Eurogroup agreement, which was, in a sense, by the standards of the Eurogroup, quite revolutionary. If you read the statement of the 20th February Eurogroup, you see something remarkable. The word program was not used, and the word the acronym MOU was not used. The Eurogroup concurred that the Greek government should be judged on the basis of a list of reforms of this Greek government. So we managed to escape, even though for only a few days, the straitjacket of the previous MOU, which was killing the Greek economy. That wasn't a mistake. That was a great success. Where the mistakes begin, the mistakes begin two or three days later when we had a teleconference, when the institutions came back and insisted on bringing back to the table the MOU. I responded decisively on this, saying that the Greek government does not see why the MOU is coming back after the 20th of February, but in a sense, in an attempt to find common ground with the Troika, with the institutions, and with the Eurogroup. We allowed ourselves to fall into the trap of beginning negotiations in the context of the failed MOU, of allowing ourselves to be dragged into the MOU process of negotiations, a process which is also known as the comprehensive review, where technocrats demand that we talk about everything, which means, of course, to talk about very little or nothing. So for many weeks, we had this endless pseudo-negotiation where we were asked what we want to do about VAT. We told them they would disagree, but they wouldn't come up with their own proposal. Then they would insist we move on to another topic, privatizations, and then another topic, labor markets, and another topic, product markets, and another topic, which would be what the judiciary. And this was a non-convergent process, and we hadn't realized, well, we suspected it, but we weren't sure that what they were doing, which turned out to be correct, is that they were trying to stall. They were trying to have a never-ending, non-convergent discussion until liquidity of the Greek state would expire completely, it would be dried up, and then our banks would be shut down and a gun would be pointed at our heads. So that was a mistake. It was also a mistake that we were too acquiescent. We gave up too easily on a number of important fronts like austerity, or accepted austerity. I had disagreed on that, but then our negotiating team by the end of April had agreed on primary surpluses, which I considered to be very high. And the idea was to exchange that for a debt restructure, but I had disagreed with that because once you give the high primary surpluses, then you lose the argument on debt restructure. So, but if anything, our regret is that we were too compliant, too acquiescent, and we allowed the other side to lock us into a never-ending process which was never going to yield a mutually beneficial agreement.
So do you feel that maybe an opportunity has been lost at this point?
Of course. But we fought a good battle. And remarkably, we reached the end of June with the Greek people facing shut banks and yet not being terrorized and delivering a magnificent verdict in the referendum. Like, you know, every war, you are going to lose battles, but hopefully not the war.
Okay, so moving into the actual term deal, I mean, you have strongly come out against the agreement Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras signed on July 13th, which you call the terms of Greece's surrender. If you're right about the devastation such an agreement will bring on your country's economy, and given that not even your prime minister believes what he has signed up to, Do you really think that a third bailout program will actually be implemented over the next 3 years? Or is this agreement intended to be broken anyways?
Of course, it's a non-viable agreement. It's not just my view. As you said, the Prime Minister agrees with me entirely. This is an impossible agreement. It's another extend and pretend, even worse than the first bailout of 2010 and the second one of 2012. This is even worse. It is the kind of agreement that one writes up if one wants to humiliate the other side, not if one wants to allow the other side to grow and to recover. And there is no doubt whatsoever that this agreement is going to be confined to the dustbin of history very, very soon. You don't have to believe me or Alexis Tsipras. Wolfgang Schäuble said so in the Bundestag very recently. He doesn't believe in that agreement either. I don't think Christine Lagarde, the IMF, came up with a verdict that this is just a ridiculous agreement and that it's going to push the Greek debt-to-GDP ratio above 200%. I have also no doubt, even though there has not been such a declaration, that the European Commission doesn't believe in it. Mario Draghi is a very clever man, the president of the ECB. I can't imagine that he agrees with it either. So this is what has happened to Europe. We have an impossible agreement imposed on the weakest of member states simply because the powers that be did not want to admit that they had erred, that they had made mistakes with the fiscal consolidation austerity program that they've been imposing upon our countries for the last 5 years.
So in a sense, you're in the same position as before in that you're locked into something that is not going to work. In an interview back in January, you told me that Grexit was neither desirable nor a negotiation token on your part. However, you also told me that while Greece's continued membership to the U.S. system was preferred, Greeks should not lower their heads and do as they were told. So basically that membership to the single currency should not be at any price. Have we reached past the point where the price for Greece to remain in the Eurozone is too high? I mean, isn't default and Grexit inevitable now, based precisely on the fact that you're locked into an impossible agreement?
Well, the two don't necessarily go together. They may do, but they don't necessarily go together. Default and Grexit. I mean, we were in default. You know, about a month ago or so, actually more than that, we defaulted to the IMF. I think that it was essential that the moment, this was my recommendation to the government when I was still finance minister, the moment they threatened us with closing down the banks, we should have threatened them with defaulting to the ECB. The S&P bonds that the ECB holds come to 27 billion of face value. We should have defaulted on that. We should have restructured them. They were Greek law bonds which said to the central bank that it is preposterous that the central bank of Greece, and that's the ECB, it's also the central bank of Spain and so on and so forth, should shut down banks which it itself has declared to be solvent. And that this is a major aggressive act, it's an act of aggression, and that it will have to pay the price of the S&P bonds being defaulted upon. I think that that would have been a very credible threat, and it would have kept us in the Eurozone because in the final analysis, no one wants Greece to get out, perhaps except Dr. Schäuble. But I'm sure that the ECB and Chancellor Merkel and President Hollande, even Mario Rajoy, do not want to see Greece being pushed out because the cost will be tremendous. And, moreover, the Eurozone would stop being a single currency. It would become something like a fixed exchange rate regime where creditors, debtors, citizens, voters, as well as investors, would start worrying and speculating as to who is next.
Mr. Varoufakis, you mentioned twice Minister Schäuble. I would like to follow up on the subject of Grexit. It is now clear that Germany favors the exit of Greece from the Eurozone, at least temporarily. After reading both your books and articles, it is clear that you don't believe in the future of a single currency for Europe. Aren't you and Minister Schäuble paradoxically in agreement in this point?
Well, let me first say that it is not true that Germany has decided that Grexit is the best option. Dr. Schäuble has decided that. It's okay. Not my view that Chancellor Merkel necessarily agrees with him. She may feel that he has enormous power in the Bundestag and she may be tempted by the idea of letting Greece go, but I'm sure she doesn't want to let Greece go from the Eurozone. Whereas Dr. Schäuble, you're quite right, he's told me so a number of times, believes that Grexit is the best option. My view is that to this day, despite everything that has gone down, that toying with the idea of a Grexit is extremely dangerous for the whole of Europe. The single currency is constructed in a devilish way. It's constructed and operates and is governed by the Eurogroup in an undemocratic fashion and in a way which is financially and economically detrimental to the interests of Europeans. That does not mean that we should try that we should dismantle it. I think there are very simple ways of fixing it, of making it work for everyone. Unfortunately, the powers that be in Europe are not interested in such rational redesign of the Eurozone area.
You say right now that the idea of Grexit is very dangerous for Europe. Professor Mariana Mazzucato, someone we have interviewed on several occasions here in El Búho, argues that if Greece were to leave the European Monetary Union, Italy would follow suit within a year. Do you share such a view? Are you agree?
Well, for the interest of full disclosure, let me tell you that Mariana is a good friend and colleague of mine. So not only is she a good friend, but this is somebody that I agree with entirely on all these matters. Yes, there's no doubt Italy is going to follow suit, because let's face it, the Italian economy is a very interesting example of an economy within the Eurozone that is being throttled by the Euro, by the policies pursued by the Euro, by the Eurogroup. And in 2014, for instance, Italy had a current account surplus. And on top of that, it had a primary budget surplus of 2.2%. And yet its debt-to-GDP ratio rose by almost 10%, 9%. So it is clear that while the country manages to export and to live within its means, both in terms of its trade and in terms of its budget, yet it is sinking deeper and deeper into debt. And a Greek exit would begin the process of an Italy exit. Grexit would lead to an Italy exit. There's no doubt. Mariana is completely right.
Mr. Varoufakis, what do you make of Spain's positioning with regards to Greece over the negotiations? I mean, our Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy was eager to display his support for Mr. Samaras during the last January's elections, something you criticized, and was also very negative on your government holding a referendum. Like others, he actually said that a no would lead to Greece leaving the euro. How do you explain that the other so-called peripheral countries, which have also been subject to bailouts, turn against Greece?
Well, look, I'm often told that, when I was at the Eurogroup, there were 18 countries against me, 18 finance ministers against one, me. Mm-hmm. And my standard answer to this is that this is not exactly so. The 18 are divided in three groups. One very small group really believes in austerity. They do believe that practicing austerity is a way to grow out of the crisis, to deal with the debt, and so on and so forth. But this is a minority. The second group of countries, and that includes Spain, are countries that whose leadership does not believe in austerity. And I can assure you that the finance minister does not believe in the MOU either. He did his utmost, and I think he's quite proud of the fact that he managed to escape an MOU being imposed upon, and the Troika being imposed upon Spain. So this is a group of countries that includes Ireland, for instance, and Portugal, that have imposed austerity upon themselves, without believing in it. And then there's another group of countries, like France, for instance, who have not imposed austerity upon themselves and fear, however, that if they side with Greece too strongly, then austerity will be imposed upon them. So the nations, the governments, like the Spanish government, who have imposed austerity with detrimental effects on your economy, they would have a lot of answering to do to their own people if they allowed our government to get away with it, to escape a new austerian turn. Now, everybody knows that the governing party in Spain is particularly worried about Podemos and the prospect of losing an election. And for them, putting down an insurrection, in inverted commas, in Greece by Syriza, had very clear party political benefits for them. But that doesn't mean that they agree with the policies that are being imposed upon Greece.
Right. I mean, the narrative now is that Greece was on the path of to recovery, that there was still homework to be done, and that Syriza pretty much undid all the progress and effectively put the economy back in shambles. I mean, this is something actually Minister Schauble just said a couple of days ago to Der Spiegel, and which is, you know, now included in the narrative of the South, southern countries. You know, it seems though as if the weight of what's going on is back put on your government as an example to the rest, isn't it?
Well, you know, this is such an offensive narrative. Such an offensive narrative. Think about it. It's like saying that the Greek people were stupid, that they were onto a good thing with the previous government, but they stupidly decided to chuck out the previous government and elect us. And had they not done that, Greece would have been recovering. It's completely offensive and untrue. It is offensive because it's so untrue. Let me give you the true story. The true story is that there was never any recovery. Never. Not in the slightest. The recovery that was reported was a statistical mirage. In 2014, GDP, nominal national income, continued to fall, to collapse. What happened was that prices were falling even faster. So if you compute, measure national income in terms of real GDP, which is a ratio, on the numerator you put national income in market prices, nominal GDP, which is falling, and on the denominator you have average prices, which are also falling and faster, because the numerator and the denominator are both negative numbers, the ratio becomes positive. So suddenly we were rejoicing in the increase in the real GDP when GDP in euros was coming down and prices were coming down. That was a sign of a Great Depression. When both incomes and prices come down and investment is zero and bank credit is falling precipitously, that is not recovery. That is a catastrophic situation. And this is the catastrophic situation that made the Greek people turn to us and elect us. The Greek people are not stupid. They did not elect us because things were going well before. They elected us because of the catastrophe that was continuing. And Dr. Schäuble and the rest of Europe making this point that there was recovery before we were elected and the problem was Syriza. These are both untrue and offensive comments.
On the subject of Spain's role in the Greek negotiations, and based on your experience working with Spanish Minister Luis de Guindos, do you think negotiations could have gone differently had he been president of the Eurogroup? And another question, do you think de Guindos really had a chance at all to succeed Mr. Dijsselbloem? Do you actually think he had a chance?
Yes, I think it was very close. I think it was very close. And let me tell you, at the risk of upsetting people, that personally I would have much preferred Luis de Guindos to Jeroen Dijsselbloem for one very important reason. Firstly, he understands finance and economics much, much better than Jeroen Dijsselbloem. My conversations with him at the personal level, when we were behind closed doors, when, for instance, I visited him in Madrid, showed the man that is savvy. He understands how the economy works. And there was much disagreement. I'm displeased that there was a major disconnect between what the two of us were saying to one another when nobody was listening and his official position in the Eurogroup. That's another matter. Compared to Jeroen Dijsselbloem, he is a giant of financial and economic wisdom. Having said that, I don't think that it would have made much of a difference because, let's face it, the Eurogroup is completely driven by the powerhouse that is Dr. Schäuble. And watching the Guindos in the Eurogroup, I can assure you that he was beholden to that powerhouse.
If instead of Greece and Syriza, today we were discussing Spain and Podemos, do you think matters would have gone differently? That essentially size matters, and that not being systemic enough made it easier for Brussels to corner you into a comply with the rules or else?
Well, size does matter, of course. It's one thing to have to owe 300 billion, it's another thing to owe 1 trillion. It makes a difference. But even Greece was sufficiently systemic in 2010, 2012, even all the way up to 2013. But what they've done with the bailouts was to cynically transfer potential losses from the banks onto the taxpayers. So Greek debt to the private banks, to the French and German private banks in particular, was transferred and was shifted onto the shoulders of the Greeks, the Germans, the Spaniards, the Portuguese, the Slovaks, and so on and so forth. Once that cynical transfer had taken place in the name, supposedly, of solidarity with Greece, then they could say to the Greek government, now we don't care about you. I mean, of course, I will still insist that though they thought that Greece was no longer a systemic threat, it still was. The tragedy was that their conviction that they could handle a Greek a Grexit led them to make those threats against my prime minister, and those threats worked. But if they had amputated us, maybe it is true that for a few months the central bank, through its quantitative easing program, would have managed to keep the whole thing together and not to create too much of a storm in the financial markets. But in the end, 1 trillion euros would have been lost, and the process of disintegration of the Eurozone would be unstoppable, even with little Greece. Imagine if Spain was threatened in that way. So yes, you're right. Size matters.
So last January, you told me that you fear the prospect for the emergence of a postmodern 1930s. I mean, given the U-turn the government has made since the referendum and its damage to Greeks' faith in democracy, the fact that you can essentially no longer pass legislation, I mean, the Thessalonica program is dead, without Brussels' consent, that is, and the revolt that is taking place inside your party, do you believe Syriza will be able to remain united and prevent the political unraveling of the country?
Well, you're quite right. Greek democracy has been dissolved. We had a coup d'etat, effectively, last week. A government was forced to choose between committing suicide and being executed. And in the end, it chose the former. The postmodern 1930s, therefore, is all over us. Remember that the 1930s saw to it that there was a fragmentation of the common currency. We have this fragmentation now completely and truly. So a euro in Greece is not worth the same as a euro in Spain, which is not the same worth the same as a euro in Germany. Okay. Secondly, and that is very important, the competitive devaluation that began in earnest after 1929, leading into the 1930s, and which saw to it that deflation and loss of income and employment was universalized, it's already happening in Europe. When wages in Spain have fallen so precipitously compared to France, and car manufacturing has been stolen away from France and other parts of Europe and has been transferred to Spain to take advantage of the very low wages, this is another form of competitive devaluation. It is not contributing to the solidity of Europe. It's not contributing to a closer union, either economic or political union. So the process of fragmentation of the postmodern 1930s is all over us.
So looking into the future then, as a Syriza MP, but at the same time as someone who is in direct opposition with the government's recent decisions, what role will you be playing in the political arena going forward?
My objective and my dream and my aspiration is to continue speaking the language of the truth, because I believe that the left has no other alternative, and the left does not have the right to embrace a false narrative. This is why I'm not going to vote for this bailout ever, even if my life is at stake, so to speak. But at the same time, try to maintain the unity of Syriza. And the way I'm trying to do that is as follows. I understand entirely the grave difficulty faced by Alexis Tsipras and the rest of my government colleagues. I understand entirely that they have very good reasons for capitulating, for saying that we have to live to fight another day. There are very strong arguments on both sides. On the side of those like Tsipras who say that we have to live to fight another day, and on my side who say we should have gone into opposition or should simply have resigned. This is what a hard choice is. A hard choice is what happens when there are hugely important arguments, equally important arguments, on each side of the argument. So in the same way that I do not consider myself to be more revolutionary than Alexis Tsipras, and I recognize that he's as left-wing and as honest and as left-wing as I am, at the same time, I would like them, those who went with the government, to recognize that we who voted no are not less responsible than they are. So responsibility, conviction, and ideological purity are equally divided amongst them, amongst us, except that we have a different judgment on what we should be doing. I think very soon, if we manage to maintain this unity despite the differences, we're all going to be together again and face up to the misanthropic and economically irrational policies of the European Union.
Mr. Varoufakis, former Minister of Finance in Greece, it has been a pleasure to have you in our show, El Búho, in Radio 4G. Thank you very much for your time, and we hope the political, social and economical issues in Greece and in all Europe resolve as soon as possible.
Thank you, and it will be a great help if the Spanish people take up this fight on behalf of Spain, of Greece, of Germany, of everyone in Europe.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Goodbye, Zani. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.